nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Let's go back to the MD part where talking about some kind of basics of AMD, how to run AMD simulation. Actually, last time we had a question after class, you know, how to control the temperature of your system, right? Okay, actually controlling temperature is basically controlling velocities. So, well, first of all, we need to control temperature in many processes, right? Our AMD simulation are trying to simulate real physical process. And the temperature is a key parameter, for example, heat conduction. If we want to mimic a conduction based on the Fourier equation, we have one side hot, the other side cold, and see how much heat flow, heat flux we will get, then we need to be able to set two temperature reservoirs, okay, one hot, one cold. So, and also convection on a flat plate with constant surface temperature, right? Then we need to be able to maintain the surface at the temperature we want, right? There are many other situations the temperature is essential. For example, chemical reactions, right? At a certain temperature, it won't happen. And then there's activation temperature. Above us temperature, you start to see reactions, right? Other processes like phase change or so, it happens at a certain temperature. So you want to see at what temperature the simulation will tell you, oh, we have phase change now, right? Okay, many processes. So what is temperature? Okay, temperature is something we can measure with a thermometer, right? It's a, you can imagine that the thermometer will be in touch with a large number of atoms, right? It really detects information of those. So at the microscopic scale, it is really a statistical quantity of the thermodynamic system, okay? And it should be in thermal equilibrium, okay? Which means that, you know, all the atoms, they should sort of vibrate at the nearly same strength, right? There are situations where, you know, the systems can be in thermal non-equilibrium, okay? It's very common, for example, if you shine laser on a metal, okay, in the laser manufacturing or whatever way, you know, any optical experiment, the electrons will be excited, then they become much hotter than the lattice. Okay, so that there you have a thermal non-equilibrium, then you need to use multiple temperatures to describe the system. You can give electrons one temperature, you can give the lattice another temperature. All right. And sometimes even the lattice itself is not in equilibrium, okay, because we have these many phonons, right? We have introduced phonon dispersion. You have many modes characterized by omega and the k, right? So each omega and the k is one phonon mode. So certain phonon modes can have, have much higher population than other phonon modes. I just use an example again for lasers. After electrons are excited, electrons can couple energy to phonons, right? They couple to some phonon modes in the system. So you will find that, you know, certain phonons are hotter than the other phonons, so this is not equilibrium. But anyway, as long as your system is in thermal equilibrium, so we can define the temperature to describe that thermodynamic system. You know, especially for lattice, it's going to be the vibration. Okay. All right. So we can control temperature in AMD using different thermostat. It's just like an experiment. You can have a hot plate, right? You can set the temperature. And to mimic that, we can have a sort of a model thermostat in these simulations. One is called Neuss-Hoover thermostat. Okay. The other is a direct velocity scaling. Okay. We can see why velocity is relevant in this situation. All right. So temperature is a really defined by the statistical thermodynamics, right? If you know a little bit about statistical thermodynamics, still a branch of the thermodynamics, okay? The temperature is related to the kinetic energy of the system, okay? For ideal gases, the kinetic energy per degree of freedom of a particle in an ideal gas is half kBT, right? So we usually use kBT to represent, you know, how much kinetic energy these particles will have if you know the temperature. And KB is Boltzmann constant. 1.38066 times 10 to the minus 23. This is an important basic constant. Okay, so I'm not giving the derivation here, but if you are more interested in the details, you can read the statistical dynamics. This is a standard in any textbook. But I hope you can appreciate the idea that temperature is related to kinetic energy. Okay. All right, so if a particle can move in three dimension, and it has a 3 degrees of freedom, so we need to multiply 3 to that kinetic energy. So it becomes 3/2 kBT. All right. And then, well, if I have an N particle in the system, N can be large, right, for any reasonable size of a system, then we multiply N to the individual particle energy. All right. So this is going to be 3/2 N times kBT. All right. Then the kinetic energy we know is going to be the kinetic energy of each individual particle summed together. So it's going to be a summation of, you know, the mass for that particle, the V for that particle square, half, all right, half mv square. Okay, we know that that's the kinetic energy for an object moving at velocity V with a mass m, right? So we just sum up all these particles. Now they can have a different velocities, right? In a real solid, at any instant time, the atoms, they vibrate at different speeds, actually. You know, all right. So this needs to be equal to that, 3/2 N kBT. So we can relate the temperature, of this group of particles as 1/3 times N kB, 1/1 over this whole, product, times, mv square summation. Okay. So now, once you want to set the system at a certain temperature T, you can start to think about, you know, what velocities I should assign, okay, to achieve that. Or, in other words, if you already know the speed of the vibrations, and you can find out the temperature, can tell the temperature, right? The question I asked you last time, you know, around room temperature, what would be, the speed of a carbon atoms, right, in this wood, say? That's kind of a similar idea that, you know, from the temperature, you can derive kind of the typical velocity based on this statistical thermodynamic relation. Okay? So now we know, you know, in order to set temperature, we control really the velocity. Okay? So velocity is a important quantity in MD simulation, right? So how do we control that? There are different ways. There have been algorithms. One is a Neuss-Hoover thermostat, right? So an example that where we control temperature, one of them is MVT, right? MVT, we control temperature, you know, to ensure it's a constant temperature. And the volume is fixed. The number of atoms is also fixed, right? So let me use this MVT example as an example how we can guarantee constant temperature, right? Okay. So, we have to use a thermostat, right? Then what we do is we can modify the equation motion, to allow the MD system to interact with a thermal reservoir at a constant temperature, right? Before, we have this equation motion we already introduced last time. This is a natural equation motion that, the particles will interact with each other. Right? And the energy is conserved. It's just like a spring system, right? If you don't interrupt it, you don't introduce any friction or damping, the system will vibrate, energy is conserved, right? So now we kind of introduce some damping, okay, to the system where we modify the, momentum, equation, where it is a Newton's second law of motion, F equal to ma, right? So introduce additional force. You can view this as kind of a friction. Right? Eta, you know, become dpi dt equal to the force. The force is naturally coming from the distance between the particles, right? Based on the potential. This is a determining. But then we add additional term minus eta pi. Okay. Now, if eta is positive, then this is really, really friction, right? It's going to slow down the system is kind of removing energy from the system. But eta can also be negative, right? If eta is negative, you can see that second term, you know, negative minus a negative, you can be positive. So this is a kind of a negative friction, which means you are pushing, right? You are driving the spring mass system to even a higher speed, right? So you add energy. So the sign of eta, you know, has this meaning as I introduced. So you can view this from your dynamics and vibration class that is basically we introduce friction, artificial friction. We don't really have a surface that really slow down the atom. We go in and interrupt the velocity, right? It's kind of a artificial friction we apply in the simulation. Okay. All right. So in the Lewis Hoover thermostat, we vary eta according to this relation. I mean, this is sort of to guarantee the stability of the simulation. We don't want the eta to change so rapidly from one time step to the next, right? We want eta to sort of change gradually to be smooth, right? So we control eta using this equation, d eta dt equal to 1 over tau t square t over t set minus 1, okay? Where the T set is your desired temperature, where you want your system to be at the, you know, that temperature. Okay. So, and the tau T here is a time constant. So, time constant that describes the coupling strength between, the particle and the thermal reservoir. Okay. So if you have a long time constant, that means the coupling, is weak. If you want a system to change, then it changes slowly, right? So long time constant means the response is slow. You're not disturbing the system much. So it kind of slowly, gradually approaching the temperature you want. So look at this equation. How does it guarantee that it will reach the temperature we want, right? So you can see that if the actual temperature T is lower or is above the desired temperature T set, we want to slow down the atoms, right? Their velocities are too high. And, we want to slow down. So, bless you. So what happens is that, you know, the eta, you know, if this is higher than T set, it can be larger than one, right? The right hand side would be a positive number. So the positive number is actually scaled by this one over tau T squared, right? So that number, if tau T is large, after scaled by the tau t square, the whole right-hand side will be a small positive number. But anyway, because the right-hand side is positive, your eta is going to increase with time, right? So eta dt is a positive. Eta will increase, and eventually will become positive. If it initially is negative, eta is negative, then your system is accelerating. But if it's higher than your desired temperature, eta will eventually become positive and will apply friction to your system to remove energy. So you can see that it might not kind of slow down your system right away. It will take a little bit of time. So especially when your time constant is long, right? Okay. So this is you don't want to, for example, you don't want to kick the system too strongly. I mean, you know, for example, if you want to heat up, okay, that's a second. Let's introduce that first. If the actual temperature T is below the desired temperature T set, the right hand side will be a negative number, right? So even at one time point, eta is positive, but it will gradually decrease, cross zero, and become negative. And once it becomes negative, it's gonna remove energy. Add kind of energy to the system, and the temperature will go up, right? Now, if we don't do this, if you have a very short time constant, what happens is that sometimes you may add too much energy to the system, and then the system will evaporate right away. It'll go overshoot on the temperature. So having kind of a gradual temperature change is good to stabilize the system so it doesn't run away, right? Okay, so how to implement this into the Verlet Leapfrog algorithm, which we introduced last time. We didn't have temperature control, right? But now we can add this here. Okay, so you can see that the R equation is still the same. There's nothing because we didn't really alter the equation for the position, right? So it is still R for the particle at the next time step is the O time step plus the velocity at the next half time step, right, times delta T divided by M, right? That's a like a central difference. Then our error will be on the third order, so which is pretty good. So the P equation, if you discretize this equation using the P to be at the half time steps, where but we still evaluate our eta at the whole time steps, right? If you plug in those and do a little bit of math, move the P on one side and then consolidate the coefficients, you will find the equation will look like this. Okay, so and the eta will evolve, as we said, the controlling equation, right? Turn that differential equation into this discretized equation. So eta will evolve with time of that. So now you can sweep through with different time steps, right? Is all everything else is the same? Is just the equation for the P is different, and you have an additional equation. So the system temperature will gradually approach the desired temperature. So this is also a way that you can increase temperature, decrease temperature of your system to the temperature you want, right? It's kind of a mimic experiments where you have a hot plate, you set temperature, you put your object on, wait for a while, the system will be reached that temperature. It can take hours, right? But in AMD simulation, we kind of speed up that process. It really reached the desired temperature really in picosecond, right? In less than 1 picosecond. So in that sense, that you know, the heating rate or cooling rate in AMD simulation is much larger than what you see in a real experiment. You know, that's but this is limited by the computational cost, right? As long as it didn't run away, it's still fine. So if we set eta equal to zero, then this will be NVE ensemble, because when eta equal to zero, your equation for the momentum will recover for that NVE system where you remove the friction. So it's going to be a spring mass system, isolated system. There's no energy exchange with the outside. So potential energy and the kinetic energy total is conserved. And this is very convenient that you can just use eta to switch between NVE and MAT. So the coding, in terms of coding, is the same coding, and it depends on how you set this eta value. You can switch between different ensembles. All right, pretty convenient. Okay, so there are other temperature control methods. One is the direct velocity scaling. All right, this is a fast way. So what you do is that you can find out the old temperature using the old velocity, right? So it's going to be 1 over 3 nkb summation mi vi all square, right? So that's the old. And now we need to find out what should be the new velocities of these atoms to reach the new temperature I want, right? So again, based on definition, the T nu is equal to 1 over 3 nkb mi vi nu square summation, right? Okay, so let's take a ratio, the T nu, the target temperature, over the old temperature is eventually the ratio of mi vi nu square over the mi vi old square, right? So the simplest way is to scale this way. So for every atom, you just scale the velocity by square root of T nu over T old. Okay. So the velocity, if you want to heat up the system, then the T nu will be higher than T old. So the velocity will be, going up, right? Okay. By the same factor for all atoms, right? So by this, is that you're gonna, in principle, you're gonna reach the desired temperature in just one time step. Okay, different from the Nusse Hoover. Nusse Hoover, you know, the response is quite slow. Some is lagging, right? The eta. But here, you can do it in one time step, ideally. However, it doesn't really happen because you only scale the kinetic energy, right? It's like a spring mass system. You kind of punch the mass and it gain a higher velocity. But eventually that velocity will be converted partly to the potential energy, right? So yeah, it will quickly deviate because energy will convert to potential energy and you lose some of the kind of energy and the temperature will be in between the old and new, will not eventually reach the new temperature. So you need to do this still multiple time steps. You do it again and the temperature will raise a little bit and then convert back to potential energy. You do that again. So that difference becomes smaller and smaller. Eventually your temperature can reach the desired temperature, right? So now this is a very simple way. It's pretty straightforward. Heating or cooling of the MD's simulation. But it's not as stable as a Nusse Hoover. You know, you can apply a fairly large scaling factor. And occasionally it could happen is that it may even break the bond for certain atoms, right? So please be cautious when you use this. Or you can gradually heat up. For example, you set, increase. You divide the from O to nil into 10 steps, right? Every time you increase by 10% or so, eventually doing that. So gradually heat up, right? Rather than a sudden and a very strong heating to the system. Okay. So if you do the velocity scaling, we can calculate the heat current because when you scale the velocity is a heating, as we said, is it like a heater or cooler, then we can find the heat rate through the scaling, right? Okay, we can see J is equal to 1 over A, so summation from J from 1 to N, delta EJ times over TS, where the A is a cross-sectional area normal to the heat flow, okay, cross-sectional area. And this J is the index for the time steps. So if we scale the velocity in N time steps, and then we're going to need to add up all the heat in each time step, right? And the TS is the total time, or you can say N times delta T, right, over that period. And in each time step, we scale all the velocities, right? So this delta EJ is equal to half summation I from 1 to big N. Big N is the number of atoms in your thermostat. If you have 100 atoms, then N will be 100 here. Okay? So 100 atoms, say. Then you have this MI, the VI nu square minus VI O square, right? So this is basically the change of the total kinetic energy after one time step, after you do the velocity scaling. So this is the total energy. Okay, energy. And the divided by T is a watt, right? The divided by area is watts per meter square. So that's a heat flux. All right. So one drawback of this velocity scaling is that the net momentum of all atoms is not conserved. You know, when you scale the velocity, the energy will be changed, and the momentum is also changed, right, in general, because you can say that you have positive velocities and negative velocities, and some are larger, and then when you scale the square, it doesn't, you know, guarantee that, because the momentum is a first order of velocity, right? Energy is a second order. So the first order is not guaranteed to be conserved. Okay, so how do we do that? How do we address that issue? So there is a modified velocity scaling approach where you can force the momentum to be conserved, right? And in a simulation, we usually want our momentum, the total momentum to be zero, right? The total momentum to be zero. That means that the central mass does not move, right? Central mass. We want the system stay there. They can vibrate, but they don't kind of drift away, right? So we do want the center mass to be zero. Okay. And what we do is we can find out the velocity of center mass of all the atoms, which is Vg, right? Now, ideally Vg, we want to be zero, right? But sometimes you may want the Vg, for example, for fluid mechanics, right? You want the particle to flow and look at the friction, look at viscosity and so on. So, but anyway, to conserve the total momentum, we want to make sure that the Vg doesn't change after and before the scaling. Velocity scaling, right? So, and then you can calculate the Vg first on the O time step. And, then you scale the velocity this way. You know, you plus alpha times VIO minus AG, Vg. Okay. So, we kind of use the Vg as a reference and look at what this velocity. And alpha now becomes our velocity kind of scaling factor. Now, this alpha relates to T nu over T O, but the both minus T G, which is the center of mass, then take the square root. Okay. So, and, T G is, equal to, it's corresponding to the center of mass motion. So you assume all the atoms vibrate at the same velocity V G, then what would be the kind of energy, right? So then using that, it becomes 1 over 3 nkb times I from 1 to n mi vg square. Okay. So let's say temperature associated with the center of mass motion. Right. So by doing this, you can confirm that before and after velocity scaling, the same group of atoms, they will have the same center of mass velocity vg. Vg is conserved if you use this algorithm. Right. So this sort of make sure that our system does not drift. Of course, if initially your center of mass is at zero, this will recover. Actually, this will recover the simple velocity scaling, right? And you can see Vg is zero. They can drop all the Vg and the Tg terms, right? And after the scaling, then you ask question, how much heat I have added or remove from the system, then that for the heat current is the same as the one we used on the last slide. Okay. But the net momentum is conserved in this case. All right. So there's another, example, which is NPT, right? NPT, we need to control temperature as well, but we also need to control pressure, right? And, only the NVE process, we don't need to interrupt the equation motion in any way, because it's a naturally adiabatic system, which is the simplest. NVT, NPT, we need to, interrupt the system, because we want the pressure and temperature to be constant, right? Okay. So pressure is another statistical thermodynamic quantity. And again, I'm not showing the derivation, but the pressure is written as NKBT divided by V plus 1 over 3V. V is the volume again of your system. So this is a double summation. I, atom, you sweep through all the atoms, and then J is a different atom from I. And you use the position of the atom, then dot product, the Fij. Okay. So with this, you can find the relation between the pressure and the physical quantities in the system. Okay. Now, the NPT ensemble is useful to determine the cell size to achieve a certain pressure, right? For example, in NVE and NVT, we want to run these. If we want to run this two ensembles at a certain pressure, you need to run NPT first to make sure the system is at that pressure. Then you can switch to other ensembles. So we prepare the system using NPT before the other ensembles. All right. Again, let's say how we modify the equation motion. Now, this is the original equation motion for NVE, right? Now, for NPT, we need to add another parameter, epsilon, in addition to eta. Okay. So remember that we have this meta minus eta pi in the NVT ensemble as a friction, right? So this time we have this epsilon parameter added to the pressure, also the position, in order to stabilize the pressure, right? Okay, so the time history of this epsilon quantity is similar with eta, right? You can see it's 1 over tau p square p over p sat minus 1. Okay, now the tau p is a time constant for our barostat, right? How fast you want to change your pressure to the desired value, right? So it works in a similar way. We can see that if the pressure is higher than the pressure you want, okay, eventually eta will be, epsilon will become a positive number. Okay, if your p is smaller than your set pressure, the right hand side will be negative, right? And your eta will eventually decrease and become a negative number, right? Okay, so I won't go much detail to these equations. This is we're gonna read IMD code argon using this algorithm. So you won't be surprised to see these in the code. Okay, we're gonna read the code, and so here to prepare you that to stabilize the pressure. I mean, we iterate our position, velocity, and the forces using this equation. It's not something additional. Or post-processing after the equations is these controls are built into the equation motions, right? So, okay, you see these terms, but now the epsilon terms are added. You see from these equations. Now we have both the controlling equation for the eta and epsilon. So epsilon is actually evaluated at the half time steps, for the reason that we need to sort of have a low truncation error. And by the still maintain a simple algorithm, right?